Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our story today, The Lamps of Justice, was written by Irv Tunick.
Justice, justice shalt thou follow, that thou mayest live and inherit the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee.
This is the story of Louis Fabricant and his heritage. The case of the people versus Joseph Scarpinio, accused of swindling $645 from one Philip Tommaso on June 16, 1917.
I didn't do it. I swear. I wasn't even here. How could I do it?
Mr. Scarpinio, will you tell the court where you were on the 16th of June,
1917? Detroit. I was in Detroit. My daughter, she lives in Detroit. I went to visit her and to see her new baby. In Detroit.
Your Honor, I should like to enter as evidence these affidavits from local witnesses in Detroit, which establish the truth of the defendant's statement.
Mr. Embry, you know, of course, that any such documents are inadmissible as evidence.
I am aware of that, Your Honor.
Mr. Fabricant?
Your Honor?
What is the position of the district attorney's office? Do you wish to enter an objection?
The people waive the technicality, Your Honor. No objection.
That being so, counsel may submit the affidavits. Mark them Exhibit B.
20 minutes later, the trial was over, and within another quarter hour, the jury had reached a verdict. Guilty as charged. The next morning, very early, Louis Fabricant was in the office of his chief, District Attorney Whitman.
Sit down, Louis. What's on your mind?
It's this Scarpinio case, Mr. Whitman.
Oh, I meant to talk to you about that. Judge Courtney called me this afternoon, said something about your refusing to object to the introduction of affidavits as evidence.
Well, I don't believe Scarpinio's guilty.
With his record?
I know. Three previous convictions on the same charge, a dope addict. But on this charge, he's innocent.
What makes you so sure?
Because he could have walked out of the courtroom a free man. He'd been sitting in the tombs for 60 days waiting for his trial. When he came up before the judge, he was told that if he pleaded guilty, his sentence would be 60 days. 60 days he'd already served. So he could have gone scot-free, but he didn't plead guilty. He asked for a lawyer to defend him. He demanded a trial.
He showed pretty poor judgment.
No, he didn't. Not if he's innocent.
Who defended him?
The court appointed William Dean Embry of the Voluntary Defenders Committee. He did everything he could, but the jury was against Scarpinio from the beginning.
Well.
The case isn't over, Mr. Whitman. Not for me.
Now, wait a minute, Lewis. The district attorney's office didn't convict Scarpinio. The jury did. There's nothing we can do now.
Yes, there is. Scarpinio claims he was staying at the Strand Hotel in Detroit. Now, there must be a register, something that can establish his alibi one way or the other.
Lewis, the case is closed.
Until the truth is established, no case is closed. Will you send someone to Detroit?
Yes, today.
Sentencing calendar. People against Scarpinio, prisoner forward.
Your Honor, please. I swear.
Just a minute. Mr. Fabricant, I believe you wish to enter a motion.
Your Honor, I would like to make public the information I've given to you in private.
Proceed.
The district attorney's office, in spite of the conviction obtained, believed it had a further duty in this case. In order to ascertain the facts, the true facts, An investigator was sent by our office to Detroit. His report is now in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
It shows beyond a doubt that the defendant was in Detroit, as he claimed, that he could not have committed the crime of which he stands accused. His signature on the hotel register has been attested to by experts. The people move, therefore, that the conviction of Joseph Scarpino be set aside.
Does the defendant enter an objection?
I should say not, Your Honor.
It is so ordered. Conviction is hereby set aside, and the defendant is ordered discharge.
Your Honor, Mr. Fabricant, I
should like to say at this time that I rarely have seen so fine an example of justice in our courts. Mr. Fabricant, your action in this case deserves high applause. Quite obviously, you have a true appreciation of the duties of your office, that prosecution does not mean persecution, that the cause of justice can be served equally by acquittal as by conviction. The court compliments you. We're proud to have you at our bar.
From his father on the day of his bar mitzvah, he had a Bible. Its pages were creased from handling, and one passage was marked for emphasis. It was Deuteronomy 16:20.
Justice shalt thou follow, that thou mayest live and inherit the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee.
This was the heritage of Louis Fabricant, and this was his goal. All his life, Louis Fabricant sought the meaning of justice and its expression. A warm friendship grew between him and William Dean Embry. They met often, at court, in a little coffee shop across the street from the courthouse. They met often and talked together, and they found they were traveling a common road. And one Friday night, William Dean Embry was asked to supper.
Mrs. Fabricant, I must apologize, really.
Apologize? Why, Mr. Embry?
Coming in on you this way, on the Sabbath, without warning. But Lewis made me come. I met him in court this afternoon. He just took me by the arm, pushed me into the subway, and brought me up here. I suppose he didn't even bother to call you and tell you he was bringing company for dinner.
On Friday night in this house, Mr. Embry, I never even try to guess how many there'll be for dinner. With Louis, you never know. But usually there's enough for everybody.
May I compliment you on your patience?
Patience? It's not a question of patience. I enjoy it as much as he does. Maybe that's why I enjoy it. Because he does.
Well, is everybody ready, Miriam? Can we eat?
Oh, in a minute, dear. Just let me take one last look and count noses.
You see, I told you, with Miriam, there's never any need to stand on ceremony.
It's a rather unusual gathering, Lewis.
Oh, it certainly is. All kinds of people. Have you met them all? Chap by the window, he's a boxer. A real good one. Met him at the gym. The little fellow with the red nose talking to him. I think he's a cousin. I don't know for sure, but it doesn't matter. That young man over there, he's just come back from Palestine. I want to talk to him about that.
A variety. No question of that.
Why not? How can people see how much alike they are if they don't meet? Some people would look at this room and wonder at how different all these people are. I look around and marvel how much alike we are.
All right, Louis.
Oh, fine. Come, everybody. Dinner's ready. It is traditional in a Jewish home, before the first meal of the Sabbath, for the head of the house to say the Kiddush. This little prayer is in the form of a thanksgiving, an acknowledgement of the graciousness of God. It's a beautiful prayer and yet a very simple one. It reminds us that on the Sabbath eve each week, we rededicate ourselves to the concept of freedom. Yom Hashishi Vayehulu Hashamayim Beha'aretz Beholz Va'om Vayechal Elohim Bayom Hashvi'i Malach Shoreh Hashem.
Mr. Embry, it was a good evening.
Yes, Louis, it was a wonderful experience. I know it's late, but there's something I want to talk to you about. Won't you stay too, Mrs. Fabricant? I want you to hear what I have to say.
Oh, thank you.
Louis, I don't have to tell you about the Legal Aid Society. You know it. You know the work it does.
It's a wonderful organization.
For over 40 years, Mrs. Fabricant, the Legal Aid Society has been giving legal service to all who needed it, without regard to race, color, or creed.
I know that.
Now, just recently, we formed the Volunteer Defenders Committee to do in the criminal courts what the Legal Aid Society's been doing in the civil courts.
I know. Louise told me so much about you and your work.
Well, this new project of ours is a difficult one. Yet, somehow, heartwarming. Good.
I can understand that.
Well, that brings me to another matter. Lewis, Tim Pfeiffer, my deputy, is going into the Army. I'll need someone to take his place. That someone must be you.
It's not been so long ago that I left the DA's office, William, left to go into private practice. I've just really begun to get rolling. Some of my clients, not even close relatives. This work take all my time.
All of it?
And it would pay...
Very little.
But it would mean helping many people.
That's right. Thank you for asking me, William. Thank you very much.
For 8 years that followed, day after day, with nights that were turned into day by labor, Lewis Fabricant fought the fight of the little men in court. And all this time, this growing time, he searched for the meaning of justice. He read widely, Shakespeare, Milton, the rabbinic sages, and most often that which was closest, dearest to him, his Bible. Then, with his son, walking together, he would talk out all that he read, explaining it to his son, and in that fashion finding explanation himself. He would tell the stories, acting out each part, every part. Wherever they were, no matter where, on an open stretch of beach, alone, or on a crowded ferry.
And this story I found in the Midrash, sir, but I want you to listen to it. I want you to try to understand it. You know what the Midrash is?
It's a kind of a book on the Talmud.
Well, the Midrash is the collected wisdom of many, many scholars. It contains the reflections, the philosophy, the interpretation of biblical passages by the rabbis and scholars of the past. The Midrash is, in a way, it's a little like this ferry. It's the way in which we can travel back and forth between past and present, taking our present knowledge to the past and the knowledge of the past to the present, you see?
Yes, I think so.
Well, this story is from the Midrash. In the beginning, even before the beginning, God created the Torah, the holy law. Then he wished to create the world. So he called Justice to his side, and he said to Justice, "Go thou and rule the world which I'm about to create." So Justice went to earth, and as God had commanded, he ruled the earth. But when God came down to see how the job was coming along, he was not satisfied. "It is not good," said the Lord. "I will not have it."
And then?
Well, then God destroyed the first world and created the second. And again Justice went to rule, and again God found it bad. "It is not good," said God. "I will not have it." And so it was with the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth world God created. Each time, Justice went to rule. And each time, God was dissatisfied. "It is not good," said God. "I will not have it." And then, Justice begged God to give it up. To stop trying to create a world peopled by men who refused to follow the law. And then another voice appeared. It said, "Let there be law, and let there be wisdom in the execution of the law. Let there be law, and let there be compassion in the hearts of the judges who measure the law. Let there be law, and let the law be gentle and rich with understanding." Then God appeared, and he asked of the voice, "What is your name?" The voice answered, "My name is Mercy." God smiled then, and he said, "Mercy, go thou with Justice to the earth, and together you will rule the world I shall create."
That's a wonderful story, Dad.
Do you understand it, Herbert?
Yes. Yes, I think so. It says that true justice includes mercy and understanding, too. Is that right?
Yes, Herbert. Exactly right.
After 8 years with the Voluntary Defenders Committee, Lewis Fabricant resigned. In private practice, he was an immediate success. The man who had defended small men in small courts suddenly became expert in the intricacies of corporation law. A great career stretched before him with promise of fortune. As a member of the board of directors of the Legal Aid Society, which had absorbed the work of the Voluntary Defenders Committee, He maintained his interest, advised, gave unstintingly of his time and efforts. Then there came a meeting. It was 1938, a meeting of the committee to choose a new attorney-in-chief for the New York Legal Aid Society. William Dean Embry presided.
Well, let's see now. Seems to me an extraordinary number of lawyers have applied for the job. As a matter of fact, I don't think there's a young lawyer in town we haven't interviewed. What do you think, gentlemen? Any of our applicants strike you as being just the man for the position? It's not easy. We need a mature man with a wide knowledge of both civil and criminal law, man willing to give up private practice, take a job for a modest salary. Of course, the odd part about it all is that the one man really qualified to take the job happens to be in this room right this minute. But, of course, we can't ask him.
By some weird chance, Billy, are you looking at me?
Well, I did have someone of your general appearance in mind, Lewis, yes, but, as I said, we can't ask you.
Why not?
Why not what?
Why can't you ask me?
Because, well, it's obvious your practice. Now, of all times, now that you've made such a terrific reputation for yourself in corporation law, we can't ask you to give it all up for the little we have to offer.
Suppose you give it a try.
Give it a try?
Ask me.
All right, I'll ask you.
Fine, I accept.
It was the way it happened, just that way. Louis Fabricant, who had just concluded the reorganization of a giant corporation, saved it from bankruptcy, saved millions for its stockholders. A man with a fortune at his fingertips. This man, suddenly, of a single day, chose another road and followed it. Motive? The little line, the underscored line, Deuteronomy 16:20.
Justice. Justice shalt thou follow, that thou mayest live and inherit the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee.
And now, he was sure, now as across his desk at 11 Park Place in New York City, the floodgate of the worried, the troubled, and the bewildered poured. Now at last, Louis Fabricant was sure. He'd found his road at last. 40,000 came in a single year. 40,000 problems. Few of them significant in the scale of things, but to the suddenly enmeshed, each an overpowering problem. Here's a case, a typical case, typical in its kind, typical in the wisdom in which it was handled. The girl's name was Rosalind. Rosalind O'Rourke.
Can I do it, Mr. Fabricant? Will they let me do it? I swear I mean it, Mr. Fabricant. If they don't let me, I don't know what I'll do, but I'll do this. I mean it. I won't go to graduation.
Now, let me just take a look at these papers for a minute, Rosalind. We'll see.
I didn't even tell my mother I was coming here. Didn't tell her because then she'd worry about me.
Yes. You see, you had that accident in 1932.
32, that's right.
A trolley car ran over you.
My leg, this one, it hurt it bad.
Mm-hmm. And the city awarded you $1,400 in damages.
That's right. Only to me, not my family.
I know that, dear. See, when a child's awarded money as a result of legal action, the money's kept in trust with the city treasurer. That's to protect you, make sure the money isn't spent foolishly. You can understand that.
Yes, I can, but this...
When you need money for a legitimate reason, for medical expenses, things like that, you petition the justice of the Supreme Court for what you need. Of course, that involves legal papers. That's why we're here, to help you draw them up. If the judge thinks the request is reasonable, he tells the city treasurer to give you the money you need.
I know, but they say it's only for doctors or medicine or things like that. Will they give it to me for this? Maybe they think it isn't important graduating from high school and wanting a white dress and white shoes. I wouldn't ask you for it if my parents could afford it, but they can't.
I see. How much will the dress and shoes cost, Rosalind?
I saw the dress, the exact dress, and it's beautiful. Well, the price on it said $15.
And the shoes?
$6.
That makes $21.
Yes.
Hmm.
Oh, can I get it? Do you think the judge will say I can get it? I won't go to graduation if I don't have a white dress, if I look different from all the others.
Well, we'll draw out the papers.
Oh, you will?
Certainly. Bet it's a beautiful dress.
Oh, it's a dream. It's so pretty.
Come in, please, Miss Grant. I want to dictate a petition and an order. Supreme Court, Kings County, Rosalind O'Rourke, an infant.
Why does the judge want to see me, Mr. Fabricant? Does it mean he won't let me have the money?
Oh, I don't know, Rosalind. The judge's secretary called me this morning, told me to come down and talk with the judge about our request. That's all I know.
I'll die if I can't have my dress.
None of that. Here we are. Let's go in.
Come in.
Hello, Judge Winston. Your secretary said you wanted to see me.
Yes, I did, Lewis.
This is Miss Rosalind O'Rourke, Your Honor.
Hello, Rosalind.
Hello, Your Honor.
Sit down, please. Now, where are those papers? Yes, here we are. The petition and order. Mr. Fabricant, I tell you what I'd like to have you do. I'd like you to withdraw this particular petition and order. I don't want to act on it.
Why can't I have a dress? Don't you think having a white dress is important for a girl that's graduating? Don't you think it is? It's one of the most important things
in the world. Now, just a moment, Miss O'Rourke. You just let me finish. You understand how these matters are, Counselor. I'm a judge. That doesn't mean that I know the answers to every problem that comes into my court. Take this case. Do I know exactly what is proper and necessary for a young lady graduating from high school? No, I don't know. So, I called in expert witnesses, and these experts, they tell me that a white dress and white shoes are customary for graduation exercises.
There, you see.
They also tell me, young lady, that a few other details must be considered. That's why I want you to revise your motion, Mr. Fabricant. The sum now requested is...
$21.
Yes, $21. Mr. Fabricant, please amend this petition so that the amount requested is $30. I want Rosalind not only to buy herself a white dress and white shoes, but also her class pin, her class picture, and a white ribbon for her hair.
Please may I be excused?
Of course.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so very much.
Thanks for calling me in on this, Lewis.
I thought you'd like to do it.
I did.
Some people wonder about me, about why I do what I'm doing. This, today, things like this. There's the story. One child made to smile. One problem solved. For one little girl.
He worked at his desk until May of 1947, and then he died. His work, of course, continued. Each hour of each working day, human beings, labored with problems, open the door of the Legal Aid Society in New York City and patiently wait their turn. Men and women are there at 11 Park Place, ready to help them. Men and women who, like Lewis Fabricant, believe that the lance of justice, tempered with mercy and wielded with understanding, is not a weapon, but the shield of freedom.
Justice, justice shalt thou follow, that thou mayest live and inherit the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Walter I. Sundlin, member of the Board of Overseers of the Jewish Theological Seminary and member of the Board of the Rhode Island Bar Association. Mr. Sundlin.
Privileged to speak to you from the state of Rhode Island, often referred to as the cradle of religious liberty, in behalf of a cause dedicated to help foster a better understanding and maintain the best human relationships and brotherly justice among all the people of our nation. It is well that we reflect on our status in present history. We are now often compelled to read in the daily columns of the press ominous recitals of philosophies and deeds of certain nations in the world that cause a lingering fear that another world war might engulf our nation and mankind again. There is little that we as private citizens can individually do to change or direct the course of the march of these momentous international events. But clearly, as loyal Americans, we have a duty to continue to build a united human family and a sound democracy within the borders of our beloved country. A devastating world war is just behind us. Many of our sons and daughters made the supreme sacrifice, and others returned maimed and are still suffering from their harrowing experiences. They and we have the right to believe that these sacrifices were not in vain, and that the dignity and freedom of man and woman would not be violated again. If a better and safer world is to rise out of the ruins of the past, mankind must, with a determination, live and keep the principles of true justice, religious respect, and tolerance alive and in progressive action. This doctrine must rule our minds, move our hearts, and possess our souls as never before, and must everlastingly remain deeply embedded in our hearts as they are in the very roots of our nation. Only with such a determination can the great price paid in the past because of blindness, folly, and intolerance be avoided in the future. With such a united people, our country can withstand and overcome the vicious onslaughts of the subversive forces that seek to undermine our American way of life and to stir up class against class and group against group. Let us, my fellow Americans, resolve to join hands, marshal our strength and forces, and strive together to attain this worthy objective for all the people of our nation. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Mr. Sundlin. Our Eternal Light drama today was written by Irv Kunick. Part of the material was adapted from The Lamps of Justice, The History of the Legal Aid Society, written by John MacArthur McGuire. The music was composed by Morris Mamorsky and conducted by Milton Katims. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Louis Fabricant was portrayed by Roger DeCoven. The production was under the direction of Jack Cuney. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.